at first you don't see it. It's very hard because they're smart. They're very smart people and they use things that you can't really debate. So it's hard to really, know, okay, but once you realize that you're in one of these situations, empowerment is so important because it's one of the things that gets taken away from you or that and that you also give away without knowing is your personal power.
Welcome to the Inspire to Thrive podcast. I'm your host, Phoebe Lay, and in each episode, I will be sharing with you insights from either an inspiring person or myself to help you thrive and shine online and in person. We talk about all things marketing, relationships, money, business, growth, mindset, and more. So thanks for tuning in, and I look forward to seeing you inspired to thrive. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Inspired to Thrive and Shine podcast. In today's episode, we are diving into the world of mental health, trauma healing, and transforming relationships with our wonderful guest, Sylvia Araya. Sylvia brings over 15 years of dedicated experience as a certified clinical trauma professional, blending psychology with holistic methods like internal family systems, trauma-informed yoga, family constellations, and batch flower therapy. Sylvia's journey is uniquely personal. Having been born in Costa Rica, she not only studied psychology, but also faced her own battle with anxiety and panic attacks, which is a topic that's not widely understood and definitely not at that time. This experience fueled her passion to explore anxiety in depth, eventually shaping her career to help others navigate these challenges. And her research and work have led to multiple books that she's written, including her latest, which is This What I Really Want? How to Go Beyond Trauma into the Relationship That You Deserve. Today, we will be discussing how we can go beyond trauma to build fulfilling relationships, to find love again, healthy relationships, that is. And Sylvia will also share insights into managing anxiety in both personal and professional relationships and provide practical advice for partners supporting loved ones with anxiety, as well as strategies for fostering open communication about mental health. Sylvia, welcome to the show. Let's dive right in.
Yes, thank you, Phoebe.
I'm super excited to have you on. I'm very excited to hear about your journey. You have a fascinating story. And I guess I wanted to start by finding out what your personal journey was with anxiety and panic attacks, because that's something that a lot of people do, unfortunately, experience at least once in their lifetime. And it does influence people's journeys and their career paths, and it does affect people long term as well. So could you please share with us your personal journey and how it influenced your career path, especially in psychology?
Yeah, I think I would like to start by saying that I believe my parents also have a little bit of history with anxiety and depression, which is important to say because there is a component that has to do with genetics. It's not all of it, but it's one component. And also being a very sensitive child, that is also a big, big component that sometimes is not named and has to do with personality, has to do with feeling too much. So I remember being this very shy, sensitive little girl since I was, I don't know, since I can remember. On top of that, I had some medical trauma. So I was born with a condition. Since the age of 0 to I was 3 years old, basically, I was in and out of hospitals. They didn't know what it was. So lots of tests, lots of doctors, lots of things. Until I got a big surgery that fixed it all. But the reason why I'm bringing this up is also because trauma, especially in those early years, it's also one of the components for when we are going to talk about adulthood. So again, I was a very sensitive girl growing up this way. And I think when I was in high school, I started to feel symptoms of anxiety, but I didn't know what it was. So I was just nervous every now and then, or I didn't want to go certain places, but it was manageable, so I didn't pay attention to it. When I turned 19, my life changed in many different ways. Again, another component that is very common, that age is there's a lot of chemical changes in the body. So this is important. A lot of mental health conditions or illnesses, you see it more at age 8, 19, 20, 21. In those days, I was going to college. Something happened in my family that was very traumatic. Our lifestyle completely changed overnight. And I started to have not only anxiety, I was starting to have panic attacks to the point where I couldn't leave my home. There was a point where I couldn't ride the bus anymore. I was scared to go to the supermarket, not even really like walking down the street. That was even challenging for me. I figured out a way to heal that. That's another book. But a little bit of the story is that, yeah, anxiety can reach that point, but it also can be healed. So I do understand when people say, you know, I'm so scared of this and that, because I personally went through that and I know how it feels, how crippling and how limiting can be to have anxiety and panic attacks. In those days, I was also in college. So you asked me about my professional part. And so I was in college studying psychology. And I remember telling myself, either I am the worst psychologist in the world because I'm here having panic attacks, or this is something that I need to do, that I need to pair these two together. I need to pair my psychology career with what I'm going through and make myself a better professional. And so that's what I did. That's what gave me the strength to heal my panic attacks. Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. And you've now gone on to write books and talking about going beyond trauma, which is so phenomenal. I remember us having this conversation before the show out last week, in fact, and we were talking about life after going through a traumatic experience, such as a toxic relationship. And you shared with me how you've been through narcissistic abuse, where you've been in a relationship with someone that was obviously emotionally and psychologically abusive. What was that like? And could you tell us a little bit about some of those experiences and how that can affect a person that's been through that kind of an experience, and what happens after the relationship ends? Because a lot of the time, obviously, trauma is experienced not necessarily just during, but also after the fact as well. And it takes time for people to heal.
Yeah, when we were talking about this last week, there were very important points that I'm going to bring out today because I didn't know it at the time, but I was in a very vulnerable space in my life. It was my late 20s. And also, I was going through the loss of my best friend who died in an accident. I was also just coming from another relationship, moving apartments. There was just a lot happening in my life. And I think that put me in the right position to, when I met this person, he was very sweet, very supportive. So I felt held by this person. We met online. And so he was being this person that I needed at the moment, even though he was miles away. But I felt him very close to me, and he was that anchor and that almost like the little surviving thing that they throw you in the ocean and you just grab it with your life. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. There's so many books that talk about this where the narcissist will find you when you are in a vulnerable position, and then you'll feel indebted to them because they will at the start be very, very generous with their time, maybe even generous financially as well. And you feel indebted to them. And then they isolate and they manipulate and they coerce. How did you identify that it was toxic and eventually leave?
You pointed out several things there that I think it's key and it happens even if we don't notice. So one was that, like that emotional attachment that I got with him because again of those experiences, what I was going through. And then the other one, like you said, he gave me money so that I could travel and go to where he was in another country. Again, so that what you said, you know, I felt so like grateful and, oh wow, he's been with me through all of this. And on top of that, he pays for my plane ticket. Wow, what a privilege. So I just felt very seen and privileged and grateful and that, like you said. So when I arrived, like the second day that I was there, it changed completely. So the person that was on the phone with me and on those video calls with me for a year, or maybe even more than a year, was a completely different person after the second day that I moved in with him. He completely changed. He became this person who did not want to talk to me. He was this very cold person. He was honestly a very different, not the person I knew. And that's when I started to realize that something was not okay. Those were the first signs, but I was already there. I was already invested. So, as you were saying, all the things that he was doing for me, all the kindness and the support and paying for my plane ticket to go there was the thing that brought me to him and to this other country. But then the second I was there, like 2, 3 days in, he was a completely different person. He asked me to sleep in a separate bedroom. He didn't want to be close to me. He was very cold, very distant, which was not the case when we were on the phone or on video calls. And I even met him one time physically, like we met, and he was very sweet and everything. It was when I moved in that he completely changed. And so it was very difficult because I had left everything behind. I left my family, left my country, I left my clients, I sold all my furniture, my apartment, everything. So basically, I was all invested in this relationship and to make it work. Even though I started to see these red flags and things that I wasn't understanding at the moment. But I was like, well, I'm here, I'm so far away, so I kept going.
Yeah, oh my goodness. That actually makes total sense because it's the moment they realize and they feel that they've got control over you. And in your case, you'd moved overseas. So, you were isolated by yourself, which I'm guessing that would have been so terrifying because at the start, they're very good at future faking and painting the most amazing outcome and future and making you feel like all of this great stuff is coming. And then when you're with them and they have that control, they'll make you feel isolated. They'll play upon guilt and shame, keep you feeling like you owe them, even become very dominant, reactive, volatile, and need to control everything. And also, you probably would have felt really exploited as well.
Everything that you describe is just on point because exactly, I was isolated from my friends and family on a foreign country. I didn't have a job, right? Because I just moved there and I didn't have necessarily a permit to work at the point or anything like that. So he was also controlling finances. It was his country, it was his territory. Right? So he had access to bank accounts, which I didn't because I was just coming to this country. So he was managing our finances. He was giving me all this, like you said, the dreams and the like, we're going to build this business. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. You'll see, And then it was just basically me working a lot for this business that, yes, it started to grow. But guess what? I wasn't seeing a dollar from that business. It was all going to his bank accounts because I didn't have, again, a bank account or anything. So I was, like you said, feeling exploited because I was doing all this work that he was saying, this is for us. This is for the relationship. And in the end, it was just getting to him. All the profit and everything that we were creating, it was just being built for him, and I couldn't claim any of it.
Yeah, it's so common. It's very, very scary. And that's part of the reason why this podcast series exists. I started to read a lot of books and educate myself on how to survive toxic relationships and how to heal the trauma that it leaves behind. And one of the books that I highly recommend for anyone that's listening that wants to know more about this is a book by a clinical psychologist called Dr. Ramani Dervasula. It is a great book. It's called It's Not You. It's a fantastic book. And a lot of the things that are shared in there, people will find that it's almost identical to their story. And understanding that will be very, very helpful and useful in having preventative measures in place, especially if, for the people that are listening, if you are someone that has grown up self-sacrificing and being one to be a people pleaser and being one to really want to keep the peace, especially in the family, or you've experienced maybe narcissistic parents, for example, it's very common for those types of people to fall into these traps and end up in these types of relationships. But I wanted to, I guess, change course a little bit and talk about going beyond trauma, which is part of your book. I'd love to know, Sylvia, what does that look like for someone who's on a healing journey and going through the process of now recreating their lives and pretty much creating a new story for themselves?
It's very hard. I want to start with that. And don't, I know it's easy to blame ourselves for being in that place. I know I did. And I think that we talked about this last week that I felt so bad because I'm a therapist. I was like, I'm a psychologist. I can't believe I let myself get into this circle of violence and aggression and in this position where I thought I would never be in my life. So what you said is very important. First of all, is realizing that you're there. And at first you don't see it. It's very hard because they're smart. They're very smart people and they use things that you can't really debate.
Yeah.
So it's hard to really, know, okay, but once you realize that you're in one of these situations, empowerment is so important because it's one of the things that gets taken away from you or that and that you also give away without knowing is your personal power. So recovery for me looked like connecting again with myself, connecting again with what I liked, with what I loved, because I molded myself to him. I molded myself to all of my partners, as you said, has to do with that pleasing, submissive personality that I grew up having. And I had to go back into myself. And that meant going back and remembering what was good, what felt good for me, connecting with people too, again, connecting with friends, having a network is so important for recovery. Once I started to feel a little stronger and a little bit more like myself, and then I wasn't second guessing myself so much, I was more decisive, I felt stronger. Then in that moment, the recovery really started. And I had my therapist, I had my support. All the people around me that were ready to support me, and I returned home. So that was also part of the recovery process, was getting myself out of that environment, which I know sometimes it's not so easy for some people, but I got myself out of there and I went back into my home country to basically heal and recover.
Wow, that's something that I want to recommend to people that are listening. If you haven't tuned into our earlier episode, definitely tune in because Catelyn and I do share tips on how not to fall into that trap too quickly for those that are in the early dating scene and maybe you might be already feeling like something's not right and you just haven't put your finger on it. The recommendation that I have is try not to move in with someone too early. It is something that is very, very dangerous in an abusive environment. It can be very beautiful if you've met the right person and things are just moving fast. And I'm sure, Sylvia, you might be able to shed some light on the positive aspect. But just on the topic of these toxic relationships, one of the worst things you can do is lose that network around you. And I remember within 2 months of moving in with that person, a little bit further away from Melbourne, and I thought, oh, great, I'm taking a break from the city and urban living. And that was when I was starting to get overwhelmed. I was starting to become very tired and lethargic because when you're in a relationship with a narcissist, what they do is a thing called gaslighting, which causes a lot of confusion, a lot of chaos. across a lot of overwhelm. And so my mind was on overdrive. I was constantly thinking about the stories he was making up and trying to piece things together, trying to understand him, trying to understand what was real, what wasn't. And so I was physically needing a lot more sleep than usual. I was distracted. I couldn't really focus. And I was nursing him. He just needed help. He was also very mentally tired as well, because a narcissist is spending all day, they're in their head, they're thinking about how they can control someone, control the narrative, control the dialogue. And so they're constantly wearing a mask, putting on an act until they feel that they've fully secured and locked someone down, which is another element where they use things like marriage and kids to trap a woman. We will talk about female narcissists at some point in the show, but that tends to happen. And so the first thing is definitely keep your network around, stay connected with your friends, your family. Do not be isolated, especially try not to move in too early with a person before you really get to know them. And that takes a lot of time. Getting to know someone certainly takes time, especially if they're very good at putting on an act and they're good at pulling your heartstrings. And Sylvia, you mentioned something that I really resonate with, which was actually one of the reasons I was able to heal and overcome this very quickly. For me, it was dancing. It was connecting with something that I had reduced down to, say, one or two nights a month. When I came out of that relationship, I went dancing 3 to 4 times per week. And so, just to shed a bit of positivity for those that are listening, your recovery is situation dependent. It also depends on the level of abuse you've been through. But if you can go back as quickly as you can to doing the things you love, maybe walking your dog, smelling the roses, painting, art, music and therapy, it will help a lot.
Yeah, that's beautiful. For me, it was to connect again with therapy. I had left my practice, for example, and that is something that is it's very me. It's very close to my heart and my purpose, my mission. So I had just left that behind. Like I said, I was focusing on that business that we had. So I started studying family constellations then, and that connected me not only with myself, what I love, my essence, but also connected me again with my intuition, which was disconnected, was unplugged. And that's why, when you said it, when you're like confused and the gaslighting and all those things, you can't really hear your intuition, or you can hear it, but you start to doubt it or put it aside. So I think it's also important to start connecting again with your intuition, because your intuition is always right. And I remember now thinking back, I did have my intuition telling me there's something that is not right here. I just didn't listen. But if you hear it carefully, yes, your intuition is very smart. Also, what happens is when you're in a situation like this and your nervous system gets basically punched constantly, that also prevents you from hearing your intuition. And then you develop something, or you can develop something that is called CPTSD, which is complex post-traumatic syndrome. And it's not just the regular PTSD that normally we know, which is like the aftermath of a trauma, but it's like when you're constantly, like I said, when you're constantly being pushed again and again and again, then it's like you don't have the time to recover. Your nervous system can't go back into normal. And therefore, your whole system is not working properly. Your immune system is going to be low. Your intuition is going to be disconnected. You're going to feel weird. You're going to feel low energy, as you were saying. Basically, yes, your whole body suffers, because again, your nervous system can go back into the normal, holding you, supporting you, which is the purpose of the nervous system.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, absolutely. That actually makes a lot of sense, because I remember during that relationship, I had fallen sick like 3 or 4 times. And that was really unusual. It was very rare for me to get sick. So, yeah, I remember there was a 14-day period I'd like gotten a fever twice, like exactly what you described. So, look beyond. Don't just blame yourself and go, oh, it's my emotions, or it's just because I'm overworking or I'm not sleeping enough. Have a look at your environment and ask yourself, Is there something that's toxic in my environment, or is there someone or something that is pulling me down or pulling me back? Because I guarantee there's most likely something way bigger than what you expect. And often we are blaming ourselves, which is not the case at all. And often we need to reframe those dialogues and change the story. Sylvia, I'd love to hear about what inspired you to explore holistic methods like batch flower therapy and trauma-informed yoga and family constellations. What were some of the, I mean, there are so many tools available out there, and often they all take time for us to uncover and discover. What made you gravitate towards those therapies, and how do they help?
I was blessed to be born with a mom who is also a psychologist, but also a very spiritual person. And so my mom always opened the doors for me and my sister into spirituality and alternative holistic methods and therapies. So I, for example, grew up with batch flower therapy, which is essences from flowers that you actually drink. And it's a beautiful, gentle type of therapy to help you balance your emotions and your energy field. So each flower has a different purpose. It's beautiful. Nature has it all, really. It's perfect. The world, the plants, herbs, everything is just perfect. And so I grew up with that. I have to say that I'm not always follow that path. Again, I've had some moments in my life where I've gotten away from those things because, again, I get away from my essence, then I come back. I think it's a journey. And the reason also why I took back all that knowledge and I went also into yoga and I went into pranic healing and I went into all those beautiful other methods and frameworks, family constellations, and all of that, it's because I felt many times with my clients, like I had reached a limit, like psychology had its limit in a way, like we were touching the ceiling and we could not move past that. And I know it wasn't the client. I know it wasn't me. We were doing all the right things. There was just something else. And so all these things came into my life at the right moment because then I realized, well, what if it's not the client, but it's something in the family lineage, for example? What if it's the mother, the grandmother, the great grandmother? And that's where family constellations comes in. It sees the whole family as the system and how sometimes trauma, for example, gets passed from generation to generation. And so again, the client couldn't find sometimes the answer. They were like, I don't know why I'm scared of water. I've never had an experience, a traumatic experience with water, so I don't understand. But then when we started to look back, there was someone in his family system who had a trauma with water, for example. And so when you start to open into the holistic, or at least I saw it in my practice, it's like opening that ceiling that was holding us back and just oof, going beyond, almost like with no limit. So that's why it's part of, like, I imagine like I have a belt with tools. I like to put more and more because, like you said, every person is different. Every case is different. So I like to say, okay, for this person, we're going to use this tool, right? And for this other person, oh, we're going to use this tool. And sometimes these two together, depending on the situation.
Wow, that's awesome. Thank you so much for sharing. That's really exciting. And I definitely want to look into batch flower therapy. I'm not sure if essential oils falls into that category, but I definitely have a fondness for smells and the healing aspect of nature. I'd love to know, now that you have manifested and you're in a healthy relationship, you're married to a person that is treating you well, you're in a healthy relationship, and a lot of people that are listening are probably wondering, how can that happen? So I'd love to hear, how did you find moving into a new relationship? How was that for you?
It's a whole process, I have to say, because coming back from that other relationship, as we were talking last week, the flashbacks and the PTSD were very strong. I was feeling like I was in danger all the time. I could get yelled at any moment because that was part of my daily life. I would get yelled at, I would get criticized. So it was a whole process for me to heal that. And it was important for me to take the time to address that, heal it, and, with my therapist, with myself. The reason why I'm bringing this up is because I knew that if I jumped too soon into another relationship, most likely it was not going to be a healthy one because I was going to bring all this into the new relationship and probably also find someone who was not good for me. Again, being in a vulnerable place, right? So I decided to take as long as it took to heal and address all of the areas of my life that had attracted that partner. And so I did. I just focused on myself. And it was hard because I was feeling alone. I was feeling my self-esteem was on the floor after that relationship. Well, in through the relationship too, but after the relationship, I felt like a failure. I was now in my 30s. I thought I would never get married or have a partner or a relationship. But I still focused on just accepting and loving myself exactly the way I was, exactly where I was in that moment, and strengthen that commitment with myself. And so I tell in the book, it's very cheesy. I know it's very cliche, like, oh, you'll meet him when you don't, when you least expect it. It is true because you're not sending the energy of like, I need someone to love me. I was starting to feel so good about myself that I was like, well, if I don't get married, it's all okay. I'm okay with that. I'm okay just living on my own, living with myself. And in that moment, I felt like I was ready. I started to wear a ring on this finger just to show commitment for myself. And I was like, I'm gonna put a ring here to remind myself that I'm committed to me first before I commit to someone else. And so then I removed it because when I felt ready, I said, okay, well, now I need to open the space for this person to come. So I removed it and I put it on the other hand. And I did this to symbolize like, okay, I'm ready. I have the space open to meet the person. And it's not like it happened the next day. It took a few months. But yes, in that moment, like everything that I did was very intentional. That's what I want to say. Very intentional, very purposeful, like doing the ring, like taking off the ring, like all those little things I think were just meant something. And when I met my husband, I was, like I said, I wasn't looking for it anymore. I was feeling good. I was still having a little bit of the flashbacks. I think we talked about that, how when he came into my life, then I was almost like expecting, like, oh, is he gonna turn like the other one? Is this gonna change? Like, I was alert. My nervous system was certainly on alert mode. Again, asked for a long time to be with a partner that I could talk about anything, that had done also some personal work and some healing work on himself. And so I told him the truth. I said, I just come from this relationship. I'm having flashbacks. I'm getting a little paranoid here with you, or this and that, whatever I was feeling, I was just open about it. And the
Wow.
way he reacted, yes, that let me know that he was a person that I could trust.
Wow. So you were safe enough to tell him what was going on. Whereas if you were in your previous relationship, just to voice how you felt would have come with a whole lot of blame, guilt, shame, and the person throwing it back at you to tell you it's your fault or it's your problem. That's amazing.
It's a huge difference again. And sometimes, and I say this in the book, I know that it's not ideal, but sometimes we have to go through what we don't want to know what we do want. So at that point, I knew how it felt to be, like you said, criticized, shamed, all those things. And so when he would not do that, my husband, when he just met me where I was with empathy and compassion, I was like, whoa, okay, so this is how it feels. This is how it feels to be hailed and seen and accepted. And so I was able to see the difference because that contrast that I had in my life. So he was part of like that last healing phase that I needed to do. And then I was able to enjoy my relationship because I was now present with him, not tormented by my trauma and my own fears, so to speak. And so we were able to be present for each other.
That's incredible. I love hearing these stories. And thank you so much for reminding the listeners and myself that it is important to be intentional, because I think that when we are intentional and we're clear and we've done the work to heal ourselves, that's when we can manifest love again. And there is no rush. There's absolutely no rush to be in another relationship if you're not ready. And it's important to be comfortable being on your own. And I'm sure a lot of people hear that. But sometimes when you're practicing that, or when it's a Sunday night and you know that you're going to be alone at home, it's very easy to jump on those dating apps. And before you know it, people end up rushing back into another relationship and sometimes even attracting the same kind of perpetrator in their lives. And I know going back into the root causes, which is looking at our own self-dialogue, our relationship with our inner child, and also what happened in our childhood, those kind of things. And once we've been able to identify those, work through it, especially with a therapist if that's possible, then I find that the next relationship, I'm guessing, will be a whole lot better and a world of difference. I'd love to know, Sylvia, how would you recommend people that maybe are still suffering with anxiety or perhaps panic attacks? How would you recommend them approaching dating and the new world of building a relationship again or new connections and friendships, even?
This is a great question. I think that a lot of people don't think about this. When you have anxiety and panic attacks, most likely, like I said before, you are a very sensitive person. And so I think that's the first thing. When you acknowledge to yourself, when you accept yourself as a very sensitive person, then you can start to know what feels well, what is your pace to do things. The reason why I say this is because, for example, I know that I don't like to be rushed. That is something that just throws off my nervous system. And so, what you were saying about dating is very true here as well. Don't rush into anything. You don't have to, even though it might feel that way, or the other person might be trying to push it, or I knew that I felt I was getting old and my friends were getting married and they were starting to have kids. That was pressure for me. But that is going to actually make you even more anxious. And so don't push, don't pressure yourself. Take your time to do things. Also, voicing what you feel, again, communicating. For example, to me, just saying to people, I am a very sensitive person, just so you know, and I get anxious and I get nervous easily. That alone takes off some of the pressure of feeling anxious. Because in that moment, it's like, okay, it's out. I just said it. And then if the person meets me there, then I know I'm safe. I know I can trust this person. If the other person doesn't take it very well, doesn't understand, I know that maybe it's a sign that I need to walk away. This might not be the best partner for me at the moment. Saying what you're feeling, communicating, even saying, look, I am suffering from anxiety right now, and I don't want to be in a place where it's too crowded. That is triggering for me at the moment. Can we meet somewhere where it's less, loud, for example? And that's a way to date in a healthy manner. And so knowing yourself, knowing what feels good, what doesn't feel good is very important when you're dating, and also communicating that to the other person. I know it's hard, but it's also going to let you know if this person is going to be there for you or not.
So true. I think it's important to test, and like testing a person isn't just are they going to pay the bill, or it's actually more how they respond to your vulnerabilities and you opening up and being honest. Are they comfortable with it? Are they supportive? Are they understanding? How do you feel around them? Are you feeling Like you're anxious, you're nervous, you have to pretend to be someone else that you are not, or act a certain way that you know how to do, but maybe that's not you. And what you've just said is such a good indicator of someone that is a person that's worthy of your time. And I think that having those difficult conversations is really important because our nervous system might not be used to it. But if you practice that and even practice saying it out loud before going on that date or before meeting that person or being on the phone, even, then you can practice those difficult conversations that you're not used to having. And that includes setting boundaries. That includes things like no, which is a full sentence on its own. And it includes saying things like, don't come near me if you've had a bad experience with someone. And a lot of the time, people don't know how to say those sentences out loud because it's so frightening, it's so unnatural. And I think it's very, very important to practice that and have those difficult conversations. And Sylvia, I like what you've just shared, saying things like, hey, I'm not comfortable with meeting at these places because they trigger me or it gives me flashbacks. And seeing how the person reacts, it's just such a great way of being vulnerable and building a strong connection because that person knows early on.
Yeah, it again goes back into the love and accept yourself first, because if you can do that, then you will be able to speak up for yourself, like you said, set boundaries. And then if the other person doesn't respond in the way that you were looking for, you can be like, okay, this is okay. It's not about me. This is just not a good match. I'm going to keep going and it's okay. And I'll find that person eventually. Because again, it's very easy to blame ourselves when we are going through depression, anxiety, panic attacks, like I'm flawed. I have a problem or this and that. No, we are not. This is just something that a lot of us go through. And most likely at this point in humanity, like you said, a lot of people go through anxiety. So when we say, oh, I suffer from a little bit of anxiety, or I have this, or I have that, you know, at this point, a lot of people go and say, oh, actually, I know what you're talking about. Or my mom, or my uncle, or my cousin, or someone I know has been through that. So I totally get what you're saying. Tell me what you need, and we'll do it.
Yeah, thank you, Sylvia. Last question before we dive into the rapid fire questions. I wanted to find out if someone has a history of trauma, how can they start to rebuild their sense of trust in themselves? Because a lot of the time, people come out of those relationships and they go, how did I not see that? They end up losing trust in themselves. And then they're afraid to date again or get into a relationship again. How can someone with that kind of past experience rebuild their sense of trust in themselves?
So very true. This is a great question, because that is an internal dialogue that I had for sure. Just going back and thinking, how can I do? Oh my God, how didn't I didn't see that? Those went through my head for sure. I have to say the first step, and I know it's gonna take time, but compassion is so important. Be compassionate with yourself. Compassion over blame and shame, very important. Just like you would do with a friend or a sister or brother, you would probably feel compassion for this person. And then after that, rebuild trust with yourself. I see it the way you build trust with anyone else in your life. And what does that mean? It means that you have to be very patient, because it takes time, but you have to be persistent, because it takes time. And it's built on action. Trust is not built on words. You cannot promise yourself anything that you're not going to do. So showing yourself with actions, showing up for yourself, it's going to help that trust rebuild. So for example, what you said earlier, saying no, setting boundaries, speaking up for yourself, that builds trust. Because then your inner parts are going to hear you doing that and say, wow, she defended me. She protected me. That means that I can trust her. Before, she didn't do that, and now she's doing it. Okay. You know, and so that inner child or those parts of you that got hurt in the past go, okay, I see she's trying. I see the change. I see something different here. So showing up and doing what you need to do to show yourself that you are there, that you're going to have your back, That is the most important thing to build trust.
Thank you so much for giving us the opportunity to think about these things that you've just discussed, and in particular, talking about self-compassion. I think that is definitely the key, and it's so hard for a lot of people, but it is so rewarding, and it makes a world of difference. I would love to now change course and talk about you, Sylvia. And we're going to dive into these rapid fire questions now. And basically, it's five questions and there's no right or wrong answers.
Okay, it's
Let's dive
exciting.
in.
Let's go.
Sylvia, if there was one thing that you cannot live a single day without, whether it's a physical item or something non-physical, what would it be?
Ice cream.
Oh, wow, daily.
Yes,
Nice.
I know. It's part of my self-love practice.
Oh, that's very indulgent. I love it. What is your favorite ice cream flavor?
Ooh, I have many. Let's say mint chip.
Delicious. What or who inspires you to do what you do today, Sylvia?
Dr. Wayne Dyer. Through my whole journey of panic attacks, I just listened to his talks and his videos and his radio show. So I felt like he was right there with me, almost like a teacher and a friend. And also the way that he started to take psychology in his career and went into more spirituality towards the end, that is also very inspiring to me.
That's fantastic. He's a great author and a fantastic motivational speaker. I will link his website to the show notes. Okay, rapid fire question number three is, where do you see yourself in 5 years' time? What do you want to have accomplished by then?
Oh, I would like to be exactly where I am. It's so funny. I don't see myself doing something different. I would love to continue to do podcasts and bring my message into the world. We reach more people. That would be the difference. I think I've done a good job manifesting the life I want to live. Let's have the same and more.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I love that because it shows that you are content with what you have. You also want to have more of that. So that's beautiful. What is one big takeaway that you've had recently that has changed the way you show up or the way you see the world?
Taking things slow, I think it's something very important for me. Recently, I've been traveling and I used to do everything very fast and I would be more impatient, like, okay, let's go here, let's go that, oh, we need to leave, hurry up. And I think something very important that I've learned in the past few weeks is just to slow down. It's okay. Take this moment in. You don't have to do everything right now. Or quick, it's okay to take your time and just enjoy this moment right here.
That's a beautiful takeaway. And if you could leave the world with one message, what would it be?
That we are love, that we are love, we are not anything else that we believe or that society tells us. The minute we realize that, everything else just fades away.
Yeah, that's awesome. Sylvia, thank you so much for this heartfelt, this raw, vulnerable, and this beautiful episode. You have given us so much to think about, and I would love to connect our listeners to you, and we'll be sharing your links in our show notes. And to the listeners, I hope that you've enjoyed this episode today, that after this, it has given you more tools to look into and books and resources to dive into as well, and also that you remember to be kind and compassionate towards yourself and ultimately put you first so that you can attract and manifest what you desire. And for those that have enjoyed this episode, please don't forget to leave your star ratings and your reviews on Spotify and Apple. And of course, share this episode with friends and family and anyone who would benefit from hearing. And Sylvia, once again, thank you so much for your time. It's been awesome having you on the show.
Thank you so much, Phoebe.
So thanks for tuning in, and I look forward to seeing you inspired to thrive.